Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. Today we're going to be talking a little bit about philosophy. My guest is Eldon Taylor, and for those of you who are regular listeners, you have heard him before on my show. He has put out some publications regarding how the mind can be manipulated. We've talked about advertising and all kinds of different subject matter relative to his research and involvement in that area of knowledge. But today we're going to be talking about a brand new book that has come out. It's titled, What Does That Mean? Exploring Mind, Meaning, and Mysteries. Eldon, I want to welcome you to the show.
Well, thank you very much. It's my pleasure to come back again. I love you. It's a great host you are. Hostess. I don't, do we say host or hostess? I mean, there's no actresses anymore. Okay, all right. Well, I love being with you.
No biggie for me. One way or the other. Eldon, I want my audience, those that are with me that haven't heard you before in the air, to know that your passion really has been the study of the mind, the various modalities relating to how it can be influenced. You've had so many degrees that you've acquired in psychology, metaphysics. In fact, you're a fellow with the American Psychotherapy Association. Interestingly enough, you decided also that you were going to be a minister, but you really have gone the extra yard because you have established your own company. You're president and director of Progressive Awareness Research, Inc., and you've published all kinds of materials. You have audio programs. I was intrigued with your book because you decided to take an entirely different path with this. Why?
It looks like it. It really looks like it on the surface. But here's the story behind it. You know, I see it as the third book in a trilogy. You and I talked about the book Choices and Illusions.
Mm-hmm.
Made the New York Times best-selling list, you know. And the book was, that book was all about how people make choices that aren't really choices at all. They're like rote core possibilities, like having a multiple choice set of questions, and I can choose A, B, or C, mm-hmm. when indeed there's an entire alphabet out there. Okay? So it went through the process of how we learn limitations, how we learn to be chickens when indeed we're eagles, as a metaphor. And how that limits our thinking for all of our lives. As I lectured on Choices and Illusions, a number of people asked me about the entrenchment of the programming that we get in our subconscious. And so what I wanted to do in the next book, which you and I have also discussed, Mind Programming, was show the extent to which everyone, and by everyone I mean our educational systems, our body politic, advertisers quite obviously, anyone that has something to sell us, how they had spent billions of dollars literally learning how to plumb the depths of the mind, to tweak all the little triggers in the subconscious, and invariably control us by making us think that we were making our own choices regarding everything from our belief systems to the product that we buy. And to do that in the first half of that book, as you remember, we got mm-hmm. down and dirty, and I actually, you know, showed advertising manuals, and here are subliminal ads full of sexual embeds and why they put them in and why that causes you to buy a product and all the research, why a beautiful woman is draped on an automobile, why men judge it to be much faster when she's there than otherwise, and on and on and on and on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And in the second half of that book, then I took on some simple ways for everyone to gain power of themselves. Now, as I lectured on these two books, I had a number of people that essentially were saying to me, well, how do I know even that I'm having an original thought? I mean, how would I, that became one of my favorite questions, if you remember, Donna. When was the last time you had original thought?
Mm-hmm.
And so it occurred to me, you know, that there's a guru on every corner, and they're all offering something. And, you know, sometimes it's something, maybe a salve, and it feels good, and sometimes, you know, it may be a hoax, and so forth. But within each and every one of us, there is a roadmap to who we are and what we are here for. And in order to discover that, it occurred to me that we were going to have to do something Carl Jung said. And that was, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate. So in the book, what does it mean, what I wanted to do, what I set out to do, was take my life, the lives of others that I know, where I've had personal contact, and show how things happen to all of us. What happens to us begs questions, but we generally don't ask them. What happens to us solicits from us a path, but we often ignore it. What happens to us is not the common and the ordinary that we treat it for, but is indeed unique. And there is no way in the world that any of us as individuals are going to come to enlightenment, whatever that word may mean, until and unless we find ourselves.
And that is quite a journey. I don't know of any shortcut in doing that. I think that it really takes guts. I learned it at 19 years of age. It really takes guts to be able to stand alone and to be willing to explore and to dare to be different, if you will.
Wow.
It is very difficult thing to do, because everything that you're taught is that you must compromise, you must adapt, you must do this to fit. And I don't care what culture you come from. I've seen
this
cultures around the world. But I have to share one of your quotes here. I just thought this is just so cool. And this is by R.D. Lang. He does not think there's anything the matter with him, because one of the things that is the matter with him is that he does not think there is anything the matter with him. Therefore, we have to help him realize that the fact that he does not think there is anything the matter with him is one of the things that is the matter with him. I thought, this is just wonderful. This is the type of thing you want to hand to someone that's really having a good day and say, can you explain this to me? I mean, it's just...
I do too. I absolutely love R.D. Lang, of course, and that comes from his wonderful book, Knots. But I can remember reading that years ago as a philosophy student. Well, gosh, way back, Weber State University, and it stuck with me, and it has stuck with me ever since. You know, so for more years than I'm willing to admit at this particular point in time, it has been one of those games that kind of goes like this, you know, oh, they're playing a game, and I see that they're playing a game. But in order to play the game with them, I must pretend to be playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And much of our lives, we live in that way. You know, I believe that the closest thing to enlightenment that any of us can receive are in our thoughts and questions, because they lead us inward. And everything else that is out there, like I said, it may be a salve, it may feel good, but generally speaking, it is somebody else's solution. You know, I'm impressed, and I tell this story by Hermann Hesse's work, Siddhartha.
Mm-hmm.
Marvelous book. Siddhartha is, of course, also the name of the Buddha. Mm-hmm. And he made that ploy intentionally when he wrote the book. There's a Pulitzer Prize-winning book. I'm sure you know the book. been around for many, many, many years. But in the story of Siddhartha in Hesse's novel, this is a boy that is born to wealth. He decides, as the Buddha himself did, that wealth is not the answer. It doesn't give him the things that he seeks spiritually in life, and so he leaves home. A faithful servant accompanies him, and they set about trying to find enlightenment. And they go through various kinds of training, and some of these trainings are very harsh, and they're very much designed to be ascetic in their nature, and he always masters the training. He becomes the very best of the training, but he realizes as he masters the trainings that this is an enlightenment. So, okay, I can slow my heart down, to 2 beats a minute, but that doesn't make me enlightened. Mm-hmm. I can do this, okay. So they hear about the Buddha, and they journey to the Buddha, and they find him in this grove, and he's teaching, and they can see that this teacher is indeed enlightened. It's the first teacher he's come on that is truly enlightened. At the end of it, presentation, the tour in the garden, and his friend says to Siddhartha, I'm going to stay and follow this man. He is truly enlightened. And Siddhartha says, to the effect that you should. He is enlightened, but I'm going to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And his friend says, well, why? And he says, well, he's the right teacher for you. You stay with him. And as Siddhartha is leaving, the Buddha, it's now nightfall, the Buddha himself says to Siddhartha, are you leaving? And why are you leaving? And Siddhartha said, I would stay. I know that you are truly enlightened. I can sense that. I can hear that in your words. But I don't seek to be taught enlightenment. I seek to be enlightened. And then, of course, he leaves. And the rest of his journey, he tries all kinds of things, but it's only when he stops and begins just to go into himself and his path and his experiences that he gets that epiphany, that aha, that says, this is who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what my life has been here revealing to me all the time.
I think one of the biggest challenges of human nature, and whatever period of history you study, whether it is something the Aboriginal have gone through, whether it is medieval Europe, whether it is today, there's always that challenge to the human spirit. Are you brave enough to explore yourself? And when we try to do it, I have observed that so many times people try to put other people in boxes. It is a real challenge to be able to give knowledge or to be able to give insight or to be able to give wisdom as you perceive it yourself, because it's all whatever it is that we see through in our own personal lens, if you will. To be able to just release it, let it go, and not say to someone else, this is it, the only thing. We compartmentalize a great deal as human beings, and that's normal. I think that's part of the way we like to feel like we're solidly entrenched in life. But it sure is an interesting whammo when the universe comes along and says, okay, I'm going to use a laser on this one and see what you can come up with after this. You go, excuse me, wait a minute. I just spent 20 years getting to this point. How dare you?
That's right. The audacity of it all is this. The closest thing you're ever going to come to knowing is in questioning.
Mm-hmm.
And when we do what you say, when we put everything in their little compartments and we let the brain go to automatic, because that's what it's doing, we skip the big picture. We not only skip the big picture, we cheat ourselves out of the real definitions, How many people in the world believe that one and one must equal two? And when you show them that a gallon of gasoline and a gallon of water, when added together, is not 2 gallons, they're baffled. How can that be possible, you see? Getting out of that box thinking, everyone has heard, you must go beyond if you're going to be creative. But, for me, one of the best ways to do that is to create a storyline. if I may, let me share a couple of stories, personal stories that are in the book. What does it mean? And that way I can show you what I mean. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So here's my life. I'm raised in a very religious family. And church is something that you just do every Sunday, and it's an all-day thing Sunday, because there's a priesthood meeting in the morning, and then there's Sunday school, and then there's a sacrament meeting, and there are meetings in between. And by the time, you know, I'm 16 years old, I'm a priest, I bless the sacrament in church, you know, in our sacrament meetings, and, you know, I'm a junior assistant scoutmaster, and I'm, you know, I am really religious, and I have read all the books, and I have learned the material that's in those books, and so I'm often called upon for answers to questions that other young people, or for that matter, adults have. Okay, so now it's Christmas time, and I'm going to go cut a Christmas tree, and so I leave my home and I drive out to this canyon. It's called Butterfield Canyon, this mining area in Utah, and it's snowing lightly, and I get out and I cut the Christmas tree and I load it in the trunk of the car, and you know, my car just will not drive out of that valley, will not go up that hill. It just is sliding. It's just sitting there sliding. And so I get out of the car and I walk to the top of the hill, where there's a little couple of hotels for the miners up there, and you know, what we call today the equivalent of a gas and go, but a gas grocery kind of combination. And I call my father and tell him that I'm going to end up spending the night there, and I'll try and drive the car out in the morning, and da 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 da. There is a fellow who befriends me in the hotel, and we begin to talk. And he has seen God, he claims, and written a book, the only true book between man and God, which I searched for, by the way, and I've never found anywhere. Mm-hmm. But at any rate, we have this conversation, and it lasts all night long. And he literally takes all of my beliefs apart. He shatters them. He shows how they're false. He shows me how they're based on inaccuracies, historical errors, myths, and you know, and on and on. I leave the next morning confused, obviously. And I go down to my car. Well, it snowed even more. I know that the car is not going to climb out, but I'll try it. I start it, and it drives right out. Now, there's a message there I should have got, but I didn't pay any attention at the time, all right? Mm-hmm. I drove out, and I took these questions right back to all of my church leaders, including those in my seminary classes. And when it came time for my grade, in those days, seminary was attached to the high school, and I got a grade out of seminary the same as I did out of high school. When it came time for my grades, here seminary flunks me. Now, I memorize all the info. I know it all. I've answered all the questions 100% correct on all the tests, etc. So giving me an F, I'm a straight-A 4.0 student, you know. I'm not going to live with an F. So I'm in the academic side, in the principal's office, and, you know, the president of the seminary and this particular teacher come over, and they agree to give me my A if I never go back to seminary because, you know, I'm a disturbing presence, okay?
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, that's the same as like being excommunicated from your church at like age 16. Mm-hmm. Well, now I'm bitter, and I'm atheist. You know, they're all wrong. They've got, hey, they just invented this stuff. This makes no sense out of any of this. And now I'm on a crusade. I'm reading everything that I can read that just shatters religion, any kind of organized religion. I delve into the philosophies and on I go. Well, you know, maybe another year passes is all. And I'm on, I'm taking my girlfriend, and I'm in a car, and I'm headed into a small town in Utah called Woods Cross, and it's a railroad town. And as I enter this town, I've been horsing around because it's really dark with my girlfriend on and off the gas, pretending we're running out of gas. And as a car pulls up on this large set of railroad tracks, I mean, there must have been 10 or 12 sets of them, actually, and you kind of drove up on top of them a little like mogul. And as they drove up on top of the first set, the car dies. And like a Hollywood movie, the minute the car dies, signal alarms start coming down, bells going off, whistles, lights flashing, okay? Mm-hmm. I flooded the engine to the car. It's my fault. I look up, I see this train coming, you know, whistle blowing. Connie Bennett's her name, was in the car with me, had her hand on my leg, and she says, should we get out of the car? And I, you know, the only thing I could think of is, if you try to get out of the car at this point, you know, one of us may get stuck, a car drug over us, no, sit still, I'll get the car off the tracks. So here I am trying to start the car, kawamo, train hits the car. Cattle guard catches the driver's side, and you know, pictures of this car show that the driver's side of the car isn't 2 feet high.
Mm-hmm.
They have to cut Connie out of the car. I find myself standing in a field. Time and space have changed for me. I'm not in the car. I'm standing in a field. I'm 100 to 150 yards away. I promise you this is true. I'm looking at all these EMT vehicles, lights flashing, etc. So a period of time has taken place, maybe, you know, 30 minutes, for all the cars to get there and for them to cut Connie out, because I run to the vehicles worried about her. They question me, who am I, what am I doing? I let them know I'm the driver. Eventually I'm taken to an ambulance that Connie is in, because they have cut her out and they have her in traction and about to transport her to the hospital. Mm-hmm. As it turned out, you know, there was a lawsuit. The train was doing over 100 miles an hour, had over 100 cars attached to it. Railroad company paid damages to Connie's family and to insurance company on the automobile and so forth. I was untouched. Mm-hmm. Untouched. I told this story in a court of law more than once, and, you know, no one ever questioned the story. The only comment from anyone was my mother, maybe weeks later, when she said to me, you know, you've changed. Are you a walk-in? I didn't even know what a walk-in was, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so now here's the story. When I look at this in a large picture, what I have is a story that goes like this. We have a young man who thinks he knows it all. He's really pretty egotistical. He's got, you know, bull by the tail, and he certainly is going to shove his answers, his religion, down everybody's throat. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
He has a comeuppance and learns that what he thought he knew, he didn't know at all. It was based on a lot of other things that just weren't the way it was. The result of that is he becomes atheistic. There is no God, you know. It's all right here. It's just a matter of, you know, it happened, it's called evolution, da-da-da-da-da. Then there's an accident and an unexplainable event. And when I look at that and I say, what does that mean? I can't tell you why it happened, but I can tell you it changed my life the moment I became cognizant of the story. As soon as I saw the process, I could see this story says, choose once again. There is more to all of this, mm-hmm, than just the finite.
This is, I'll use one of your other quotes to follow up with what you've just shared. Life is not merely a series of meaningless accidents or coincidences, but rather it is a tapestry of events that culminate in an exquisite, sublime plan. And that is from the movie Serendipity, as you quoted in your book. I find that many times there is so much in life to question. And yet, when I say that, at other times I will say there's no need to question because there is a reason. And many times we cannot see it right away, but sometimes when we take the time to be patient and stand back for something, we can see a flow, as you have said in the book, a tapestry that is woven.
Right.
And when you look at life, it's just so intricate. I mean, you study a tree, just one little tree, and you look at the intricacy of interaction, cellular level on up to the birds. I mean, it's an amazing thing. So your book was quite interesting. What does that mean? it poses a lot of questions, and you share a lot of your own personal psychic experiences, I'll use that word, that, as you said, just as the story you related, has changed your mind and your thinking.
Well, you know, and the fact is, let me digress real quick, like here, and pick up on something you said. I think it's always valuable to question, even though I don't get the answer. And I think what you were, you know, what you were saying is, you may not always get the answer. The answer may come way down the highway, but the value to the questioning should never be eliminated. Because if I haven't put the question there, when the answer comes, I'll not know I'm getting an answer. It will just fly by as another bit of information that is nonsensical, means nothing. Now, come back and address, you know, your point. What I tried to do in the book was show repeatedly how we can get ourselves trapped in our own arrogance and do it with all the kinds of common things that we all deal with. We all deal with politics. We all deal with religion. We all deal with the nuances to everyday life. And so I just wanted to take, you know, those things. Well, you know, I'm a very left-brain person. So when someone said to me, psychic, I had a real problem accepting psychic. I don't do psychics, okay? And so I could be really opinionated about psychics. But when I looked at my life, when I looked at the experiences I had had, I realized, now, wait a minute. These experiences aren't explainable. So what I kind of do in the book is I show how a psychic lives up to a magician Randy expectation, is indeed a fraud, is indeed caught by myself doing something really silly that no psychic would really ever do, all right? And at the same time, then I turn around and juxtapose that, showing that I use psychics when I was a practicing criminalist to handle investigations. And, you know, hey, more than once, they were right on with something. Indeed, one of the stories I tell, there was a young man who just disappeared. And his truck was found under a viaduct. The glass had been blown out by what appeared to be a shotgun blast, and there was blood in the truck, etc. And he had disappeared. No body, no anything. And this was before DNA testing as we know it today. But, you know, the blood had been sampled and been sent out for testing, and we were in the place where we really didn't know what was, whether we had animal blood or human blood. We were operating on assumptions that it was this missing person's blood, that he had been maybe shot in a drug deal or something of that nature. I brought a psychic in. I took the psychic down there. The vehicles had all been removed. There was nothing. I just pulled in under the viaduct, and I said, you know, tell me the impressions that you pick up, because she supposedly was very good at just picking up impressions where there had been any kind of strong emotion, okay? So she sits there. She walked the grounds. I'm sorry, she didn't sit there at first. She walked the grounds, and she came back. She sat in the car. She sat there for a few minutes, and she said, I see a pickup truck. I see people in this pickup truck. There are two people in this pickup truck. There is a sawed-off shotgun. I can't make out the whole plate. I see a partial, and she gives me a partial plate, okay? So, all right, we run the plate, check it against the truck, and sure enough, living right down in that area, not maybe 10 miles from this viaduct, there are two brothers. They have this pickup truck, all right? So I go down to arrest these two guys. Sure enough, they have a sawed-off shotgun, all right? Well, you know, local sheriff runs them in, drills them. I don't know how she possibly saw that, but she did see something that was factual. Now, that didn't happen to relate to the crime. We did discover that the shooting incident was an alleged incident designed to make it look like this individual had been killed, and he was really running away with a very interesting woman.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what, Eldon, your book is a very unique read. What does that mean? It does create questions in the minds of people, and I think more than anything else, it's great that you've shared some of your own personal experiences, because too often people don't want to go that route. They don't want to recognize the variables that can show themselves in their life, and with what does that mean, then it enables people to recognize that they should question. There are things that they need to examine, and it gives it from your particular perspective. Now, I know that we're out of time, and for those of you listening, eldontaylor.com is where you'll go to find out more information about his previous publications, also about many of his CDs, and he's got a DVD, Change Without Thinking. He has a number of different items that through the years he's put together that are very personally empowering if you want to explore that. So go to Eldon, E-L-D-O-N, Taylor.com, and you'll find out a lot more than what I think you had ever anticipated you would. Eldon, it's been a delight having you as a guest. Have you got another book in mind, or are you going to take a sabbatical for a little bit of time?
No, actually, there's another one rolling right now. It comes in 2011, and it is called What If?
What If? Ah,
what if?
That's it. There we go with the questions. Okay. Well, you'll want to keep up to date with Eldon, because that's something that he's doing prolifically, is writing. And Eldon, again, it was a delight having you as a guest. His book is What Does That Mean? He touches on the paranormal. He touches on many different areas that I think you will find intriguing to read. Thanks again for being my guest. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. I would be delighted. Phone lines, we've now opened them up. The phone number you can call into worldwide, it's toll-free, is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Now, also, I want to remind you, and you're going to be hearing this from me for a year, if you have a special story regarding the paranormal, do send it to me. I'm putting together 100 stories, and we're up to 25 right now. So if you have a story regarding an experience that has changed your life, I'd love to hear from you, and send it to Donna@DelphiInternational.com. Now, in the subject line, please put in Donna's book or story for Donna's book. Put in something where when I see it, I'll recognize that it is information regarding publication, and or put one of those little red flags with it or something so it draws my attention, because I get so many emails. I've got a few hundred that I've got to go through right now. So that enables me to recognize yours. But I really am interested in your story. And you may say, Donna, my story maybe isn't very melodramatic. It's not a matter of it being melodramatic. It's a matter that it's your story, and it's affected your life. And the reason that I feel it's important is that I want to put this book together, and I'll have some stories of my own in there, but I want to hear from you. The reason being is that your story may touch someone else's life in such a way that they'll realize they don't have to be concerned or afraid of the intuitive experiences that they are having. So I really want to encourage you to send it to me. And again, all you do is send it to Donna@DelphiInternational.com. Give me a call if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Now, tomorrow we're going to be talking with Irene Smalls. We're going to be talking about Jonathan and his mommy. Now, this is oriented towards kids. And if you've got nieces, nephews, if you've got friends that have kids, you might be interested in this, because Irene has some really special involvement with children, and she's doing a certain program regarding education. She's just a delightful lady. On Friday, I'm going to be having Dr. Kirshner, a physician who is really dedicated to educating the public regarding pharmaceuticals. And his book is titled, All Medicines Are Poison. Well, if that doesn't grab your attention, I don't know what will. But he goes into some real good information. The truth is, a lot of herbs can be highly toxic and very poisonous if you don't understand what they're composed of or how you should use them. I think so many times we forget when it comes to medicinal items, they all originate in some way from nature. We may want to synthesize them, but the truth is, we have to study nature to find out what works. So anyway, that is going to be coming up this week, and oh, we've got a great lineup next week, all kinds of interesting people. Go to BBS, of course, I know you're there right now, but you can always go into the information regarding my guests and who's coming up, and you'll find that listed under the Donna Sebo Show. The telephone number to call into today is 888-815-9756 if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Well, guess what, summer? I know we haven't gotten through spring, but I'll tell you what, people are out in their gardens, and there's just so much wonderful stuff. It's hard to believe here in the Pacific Northwest that we've got so much blooming and growing with a speed that is absolutely amazing. And Donna Frank wrote a poem. She said, lush and budding greens, a little white fence lining, lettuce, peppers, cherry tomatoes. A crisp summer salad meant for sweet tea. The soil is moist and cool on my fingertips. The joys of a summer garden. Well, if you want to enjoy that garden, you've got to be out there planting right now. And I thought that was so, so appropriate. It just is wonderful. I know, I don't know about the rest of you, wherever you're listening in from, but if you're in any of the northern states, you know exactly what I'm talking about when you're saying, those blue skies shining, of course. We always like to tell people when they come to Seattle, the skies don't shine, don't sparkle like blue, 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 the way you would like for them to. Usually it's gray, gray, gray. And there's a saying up here in the Pacific Northwest is you don't grow old, you just rust, because we have so much precipitation. But we're very grateful for it, especially on a day like today when the sun is just beaming with all of its might. The gray skies are gone. The blue skies are up there, and sunlight is just filling all empty spaces in the trees and the greens that are around us. And everything is just absolutely sparkling with the springtime colors and the flowers. I wanted to share a couple of little bits of trivial information, if you will. If you're having some sleep problems, and let's say you have a spouse that snores so loudly that the walls are trembling on the other side of the house, that's a bad scene. Well, they probably have sleep apnea, and sleep apnea deprives you of a lot of oxygen, and it really can cause some serious health problems. And if someone has sleep apnea, this makes it very difficult for them to get oxygen, as I said. Often they hold their breath when we have a number of members in our family that apparently genetically it's been passed along, but they do. The spouses will say they're not breathing. They just stop breathing, and then all of a sudden you hear this, and they start breathing again, and it's very unsettling. Well, researchers have pinpointed a observation, a solution, if you will. They say if you tone up your saggy throat muscles by exercising your tongue, you are going to eliminate a great deal of that. Now, they tried this with some sleep apnea patients but who would brush their tongues with a toothbrush or were putting the tip of their tongue on the soft palate, sliding it backward and pronouncing vowels for 30 minutes a day for 3 months. It reduced the severity of their apnea by 39%. Now, who would have thought a simple exercise like that would do it? That people snored less and slept a lot more soundly. We underestimate the value of sleep, and it is so important. And if you're a heavy dreamer, for those of you that are extremely heavy dreamers, I can remember talking to my mentor many, many years ago. I was in my 20s, and I would be so exhausted all the time. Well, I was keeping dream journals. I mean, we wouldn't talk about just one page. I was doing 4 or 5 pages, single lines, you know, or narrow lined paper. And she said, "You're working just as hard when you're asleep as when you're awake. Have you ever felt like that?" Well, that's because you're not getting enough rest. And it's so easy in today's world. You have so many distractions. We're on the computer. We're watching television. We've got our families. We're studying. We're going to school. We've got a job. I mean, there's a gazillion things going on. So it's really important for you to ask yourself, are you worth the value of a good night's sleep and developing habits that will enable you to rest? So if you have sleep apnea or if you know of someone that has it, try that exercise. It might be something that is going to enable you to sleep better, and or maybe a loved one that drives you nuts. I mean, I'm telling you, it seems like the guys get it more than the gals, but the gals snore too. I've known of women that have sleep apnea, and they said it explained a lot of things. Well, I would have that foggy feeling in the morning that they would get up and experience. So just be aware of those things. Also, another little bit of a trivia that if you want to save money at the grocery store, and I know so many of you are aware of it, instead of using name brands, let's say cereals, for example, when you go into the grocery store, check all the items that are on the lower shelves. Because many times you'll have, if you've got a family, they'll have big bags of cereal that are not brand names. They might be at the store brand cereal. You might find canned fruit. You can find this with frozen veggies, paper towels, and all kinds of things. And you might be able to save a fair amount of money. And 7 out of 10 shoppers who will try these other products, there have been surveys done. They do surveys on everything. When they do these surveys, they find that they're just as satisfied with that. Now, I will say this. When it comes to paper towels, I definitely have my preferences. Why? Because there's a difference. And I find that there are some brands that I'm willing to pay the extra dollar for, And really, it amounts to that. It might be a dollar difference because I get the quality of what I want. So you might be able to save money in certain ways, and that's a good thing. I do the same thing. I'm a bargain hunter at times, but I also know that sometimes there are certain levels of quality it's worth paying the extra dollars for. Donna Sebo here. We're going to be taking a break. Give me a call at 888-815-9756. We're going to be right back.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Have you ever seen or been around a lightning ball? Well, I have. I was a little girl when I had the experience. I was in Miami, Florida at the time. And we were advised when we moved into that area, it was during the summer months, that you had to be very careful because in the afternoon, typically around between 2 and 3 o'clock, there were always these storms that came in, and you knew what time it was because they were consistent when they hit. And I can recall being warned, whatever you do when these storms come in, do not touch any metal. It's best for you just to sit still in the middle of a room and whatever, don't touch the television, don't do any of that because you will be electrocuted. So these were stories that I can remember hearing, and we had moved into an apartment, or my family had, and my mother and I were at home. My brother and father had gone off on some errand. A storm started up. So we knew we were supposed to just sit still, but we really sat still when a lightning ball came in through the kitchen and was in front of us and stayed in front of us for a good deal of time, and we didn't dare move. Fortunately, we were not around any kind of metal, but just as quickly as it came, it disappeared. So I do know that they are real. I've had some people tell me, you don't know what you're talking about. There's no such thing as lightning balls. I said, excuse me. I experienced it. It was very vivid. And that particular event where it just hovered in front of us and then disappeared was quite unique. There were many people that had lived in Florida that had heard about them, but had never seen them. Well, I came across some information, and they reversed the words. They call it ball lightning. And apparently, in 1984, January the 13th, there was a Russian passenger aircraft where a ball, a moving ball of lightning, entered. And there was a news release from Russia, and this is how it read. Suddenly, a fireball about 4 inches in diameter appeared on the fuselage in front of the crew's cockpit. It disappeared with a deafening noise, but re-emerged several seconds later in the passenger's lounge after piercing in an uncanny way through the airtight metal wall. The fireball slowly flew above the heads of the stunned passengers. In the tail section of the airliner, it divided into two glowing crescents, which then joined together again and left the plane, almost noiselessly. Now, the mechanics that worked on the plane after it landed found two holes in the aircraft, one in the fuselage where the fireball entered and one in the tail section where it left. Now, in the spring of 1958, ball lightning was dancing around and about on the outside of an Aer Lingus constellation, which was flying between Shannon, Ireland, and Gander, Newfoundland. Now, during this extensive thunderstorm activity, this is what was going on. It attached itself to the plane, and it crackled, but it was an orange ball. It entered the cockpit, apparently through the engine intake, and there was a very loud sound that came with it. The first officer heard this hissing type of noise, and everyone that was on the plane felt a powerful static charge on their heads. Now, it seemed to be over a foot wide, and this phenomenon that was occurring had what they called licks of flame that were shooting from its surface, but there was no heat related to it. The cockpit was filled with a very distinctive ozone odor. Now, there was a flight attendant that really, really got scared, and she ran screaming down the aisle trying to outrun the fireball as it followed very close behind her. She got so scared, she jumped up on one of the seats in the rear of the plane and watched as this fireball continued to glide down the aisle at floor level to the rear of the cabin. It then went through the bulkhead. There was a snapping kind of a sound, and it went back out into the storm. Now, it sort of reminds me of Rip Van Winkle. They say whenever there's a thunderstorm and you hear the thunder and the lightning, that's good old Rip Van Winkle bowling. And he's up there bowling with his energy balls, and that's what's creating all of the activity. Well, there is so much in science that we just don't know about. There's so much about energy we don't understand. And these fireballs are very, very real. Why do they go through? Now, in our house, we didn't have a hole in the wall that it came through. But what enables that energy to demolecularize, if you will, and then reconstitute itself in such a way and form that it's right in front of you? And you don't dare move because it's charging everything that is in your environment. It's a lot of questions. Eldon Taylor said we needed to ask questions. That's a good one for the scientist. But since you cannot really manufacture this, or we don't know how to at this time, then the question is there. But just think of that. If that kind of energy could be utilized, I wonder if maybe we could give up using gasoline for cars and utilize that energy to propel us in unique and interesting ways. Flowers, well, I mentioned that earlier. Holland is a country that is known for flowers. Now, for more than 400 years, whenever you see a tulip, you think of Holland, right? I know I do. But the Dutch strength has been the business of flowers itself, and not really the bulbs. More than half of the world's export of cut flowers go through Dutch auction houses. And to see them, I've watched films on this, it is absolutely amazing, the billions of flowers, all kinds. I mean, I've got a photo of sunflowers in front of me, these huge, huge carts of sunflowers, and there's gobs of them lined up, ready for shipment out, and they're in the auction house, and of course, over 20 million buds are auctioned each day. And there's just so much that goes on that we have no idea about. We take so much for granted in everyday life. We just assume all of these flowers are there for us. But you know what? The people of Holland are res- responsible. But they come, the flowers actually come in from all over the world. This is Donna Sebo. We're out of time. I'm so delighted you were able to join me today. Remember, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Thanks so much for being with me. I'll talk with you tomorrow, same time, same place. This is Donna. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.